Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Now, first on the docket, we messed up. Second, remember the South Dakota Attorney General who was being investigated for an alleged hit and run? That case is still ongoing, but a little bit of an update. Third, motions in limine filed in the Derek Chauvin case. Fourth, another missing mom found deceased. Five, man reports his wife missing, and he's arrested within 24 hours. Six, a Georgia teacher's in big trouble. Seven, a Texas stalking teacher got sentenced. It's best to let everyone know it's a prank. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. First of all, we messed up. Sometimes you can have kind of a rough day. Friday was a busy day, little fires here and there that required my attention. I had a court appearance. We rushed our daily video that we put out, and I repeatedly stated Tammy Daybell's name, or last name, was Tammy Vallow. Frank edited it because we had changed it. We caught ourselves, but apparently we didn't edit it perfectly in the first one. It's my fault. I take full responsibility for it. I tried to erase it the best I could, but I apologize. Sometimes we miss things. It happens in life. Second of all, for the people who joined the Patreon page because they wanted to see the entire incident in that Pennsylvania shooting, well, you can. YouTube took us down. Not only did they take us down, they gave us a content strike, but they gave us a warning because of that. So our Patreon members can go back, and there's a link. It's on a different page, but I must warn you, this is somewhat disturbing, okay? If people haven't seen other people, for lack of a better term, lose their life, it can be very disturbing. It's out there because, well, frankly, I think people need to see what can go on in the world and how quickly people's lives can change, oftentimes for the worst. You know, these people had families, they had friends, there were other kids in the street, and what's to stop anyone from going after these other people in the street that were actually there to try and help? Thank goodness no one else got hurt, but it's the kind of thing, no one's making any money on it. It's just the kind of thing where people need to see what the hell goes on out there in the world. Because if they did, I think they'd be a little more cautious in the world. All right. Next on the docket. Hey, remember that South Dakota Attorney General who was heading home from a political fundraiser and just happened to hit what he thought was a deer? Oops, later turned out to be a guy on the side of the road. Well, guess what? That case is still pending. All right. Now, the attorney general in that case is Jason Ravensburg, and he struck and killed a man while returning home from a Republican Party dinner, and this was late last summer. Now, I don't know the attorney general. I don't even know if the guy drinks, but I've been to a lot of political fundraisers over the years for all parties and no parties, you know, both sides, and one thing there is no shortage of is alcohol. Now, we don't know, but let's be realistic, because we also know that Mr. Ravensburg said that he did not consume any alcohol that day, and the manager at the Rooster's Bar and Grill, where the event was held, has declined to answer any questions relating that, just simply saying it's an open investigation. Now, a lot of people are becoming very frustrated that nothing has taken place, including Governor Kristi Noem. Now, she said that obviously she can't do anything to relieve Attorney General Ravensburg of his position because he's an elected official, but she's disappointed that some action hasn't been taken. Now, Ravensburg has a public relations, public affairs guy working for him, and he states that Ravensburg, too, would like this investigation to end, and he would prefer more transparency. This matter should be a little concerning. First, we've said all the time. What happens when political people get in trouble? Oh, they open up an investigation. And what happens to that investigation? It goes on and on and on, and they basically hope that the whole thing just goes away. And most of the time, it does just go away. Or they say on a really low-key Friday afternoon that they can't pursue charges. But in this particular case, it seems like it would be a very straight, simple matter. Most attorneys that do criminal defense work have handled cases involving hit and run, vehicular assaults, vehicular homicides. Yes, they involve traffic accident investigation analysis. They involve obtaining, if possible, basically the little black box, the data that comes from the vehicle to see if there's anything in there which would indicate how fast the vehicle was going when the body was hit by the car. Pretty straightforward. That can maybe take a couple of weeks. Here we are now, almost 8 months into this investigation. Come on. All right. Now in South Dakota, there are a couple of things that can actually take place with dealing with an automobile accident that results in the death of another person. Really, there's four actions, all right? You got negligent, careless, reckless, and an intentional act. Vehicular homicide and vehicular battery require the operator to be under the influence of alcohol or drugs and also operating the vehicle in a negligent manner. Now, in this particular case, Ravensburg didn't take a blood alcohol test. No breath, no blood test was drawn. In fact, because it was some 15 hours later that he returned back to the scene. So in order for an operator to be criminally responsible for the death, if they're not under the influence of alcohol, their actions must be reckless or intentional. The South Dakota legislature specifically rejected a negligent homicide law several years ago, thus leaving reckless or intentional actions as the only means of an operator to have criminal liability. So what do we know about the facts in this particular case? Attorney General Ravensburg called 911 somewhat shortly after the crash. That call was released a month later. We actually released that audio when the audio was in fact released of the 911 call. What is somewhat interesting is that he mentioned his title right away. You would think if he was truly concerned, it wouldn't really matter, but he wanted to let everybody know they were dealing with Attorney General Ravensburg. And he said that he hit something. And he stated that he was on the Highmore roadway there, and it was in the middle of the road. Now, the location of the accident really comes into dispute. The South Dakota Highway Patrol reports state that Ravensburg's car was actually on the north shoulder when he struck Mr. Beaver, who was the gentleman that was killed. The crash site is on the west side of town. There's a convenience store nearby, and there's a gas station, a machinery business, and a State Department of Transportation shop. All have lights that are on all night, so the fatal crash didn't happen in the darkness of a prairie night, like I think a lot of people thought early on, just like I did, right? We've all been on a dark, secluded road where you can hardly see anything out there until it's literally on you, but that apparently is not the case. A county sheriff by the name of Sheriff Mike Volek, he lives nearby and he responded to the call. Now, Ravensburg claims he didn't know what he struck, but the dispatcher suggested it could have been a deer. These are apparently quite common in this particular area. Ravensburg says that he used his flashlight app on his cell phone, but could not find anything that he may have struck. His car was not drivable, with the passenger side front and the windshield extensively damaged. At the crash scene, there were apparently tire marks that clearly showed Ravensburg's car had moved sharply to the north and come to a stop about 100 feet or less from where Bover's body was later identified by his cousin. It's unclear how hard Volek, who's refused to speak to the media, looked for the deer or whatever the attorney general said he had struck. A tow truck was called, and the driver removed Ravensburg's 2011 Ford Taurus, which was his personal car. While this activity was underway, Bover's body was on the side of the road on the north shoulder inches from the westbound lane. His body would remain there for approximately another 10 hours. Deputy Volek didn't give Ravensburg a blood alcohol test. In fact, he went one step beyond. He loaned the attorney general, who he apparently knew, his private car so that he could drive home to Pierre, South Dakota. Then, the following morning, on September 13th, Ravensburg was returning the sheriff's car, accompanied by Tim Borman, his chief of staff and a former Falk County state's attorney. He was in another vehicle. Ravensburg said he spotted a body on the side of the road and alerted the sheriff immediately, 15 hours after the accident. Ravensburg did have a blood test, which showed no signs of alcohol, but that was some 15 hours later. Needless to say, the state's attorneys that are investigating this case need to make a decision. If they don't believe that the attorney general did anything wrong and that he was not negligent, as the victim apparently was in dark clothing, then let the people know. If for some reason there's evidence to suggest that the attorney general was negligent or reckless in his driving, which resulted in the death, so charge him. No one is above the law. Next on the docket, motions in limine have been filed in the Chauvin matter. That's right. Jesus Christ has no place in the George Floyd murder case. At least that's what Derek Chauvin's defense attorneys are asking the judge to make sure of in his upcoming trial. Attorneys representing Chauvin, the ex-police officer accused of murdering Floyd, filed a motion asking the judge to keep out a bunch of things out of his trial. Well, that's called a motion in limine. It's basically saying, judge, we really didn't deal with this before, but as we have got closer to the trial, we've realized there's a couple things that need to be taken care of so that both sides receive a fair trial. Here, one of those things is apparently to stop the other side, here, the prosecution, these are the other side, from drawing any comparisons between George Floyd and Jesus. Chauvin's attorneys are also asking for an order precluding any expert from likening Floyd's death to the crucifixion of Christ. The defense claims that such analogies would be prejudicial. I'm going to have to agree on this one for the defense. I think it's going to be granted. Those type of comparisons are not really applicable. I don't care what expert is testifying in any way. The defense also wants to stop the prosecution from referring to Mr. Floyd as the victim, as they don't want anyone labeling Chauvin as the defendant. Well, guess what? The defense is going to more than likely lose that motion. This has been litigated in most jurisdictions and it has been resolved. You can refer to the victim as the victim, even though no one has been proven guilty of the crime. In the law, they still allow the word victim to be used. This has been litigated a lot here in the state of Colorado. It started with the Kobe Bryant case when he was accused of the sexual assault case up in Vail, which is Eagle County. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court as other people filed similar motions. And the court said it's completely appropriate. That's what the statute says the victim can be referred to as. And Mr. Chauvin will be referred to as the defendant throughout the proceedings. In most jurisdictions, the court actually says the prosecutor over here, sometimes referred to as the prosecutor, the people, that's how he will refer to them as. And on the defense side, they'll say, this is Mr. Derek Chauvin. They'll refer to him as Mr. Chauvin or the defendant or the accused. That's just what is done in court. So I don't think that motion is going to get much play by the defense at all in this particular case. The defense also doesn't want other police officers getting up and talking about how they would have handled the case differently, and they don't want paramedics testifying about the cause or manner of death. This is going to be one for the judge to pretty much contemplate and make a ruling. Clearly, what other officers would have done differently is really of no relevance as it is to this case, as we know what happened. The question is going to be, was it done with the intent or such malice aforethought that it resulted in the death of Mr. Floyd? Certainly, paramedics are not qualified to testify as to the cause and manner of death. They probably have lots of practical experience, but that is saved for the coroner, as well as the expert for the defense to testify as to what the cause of death and manner of death was. Now, for those of you who don't recall, Mr. Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter, and the prosecutors want to move the trial back to June so that Mr. Chauvin can be tried with all of the other three former police officers. Originally, they were all going to be tried together, but the court severed those cases. The three officers will be tried separately. Derek Chauvin will be tried individually. The prosecution only wants to do this case once, and they want to wait till June so that more COVID-19 vaccines are made available so that they can get more jurors in the courthouse and be able to conduct one trial versus two. I'm not sure the judge is going to change his mind on that because the case must go forward. I can assure you those other three co-defendants are loving that they are separated from Derek Chauvin because he is going to be the most hated man in the room, possibly along with his attorneys, as they're the guys that are representing him. Obviously, Derek Chauvin is given the presumption of innocence, and we will give him such until and if the jury convicts him or he enters a plea of guilty. Next on the docket, another missing mom found deceased. That's right. Investigators found the body of a woman believed to be a missing Nebraska mother who hasn't been seen since January 27th. Deputies found her vehicle, which belonged to Amber Jaden, in a rural area of Nebraska. Now, deputies found the body inside her 2019 black Jaguar F-Pace vehicle with her Nebraska license plates. Family members have confirmed that that is the body of Amber Jaden. The police are waiting for further identification. Now, Ms. Jaden is the daughter of former Omaha Mayor Jim Suttle and former State Senator Deb Suttle. She operated the Gateway to College program at the Metropolitan Community College in Omaha. Now, let's give you a little background here, all right? Court documents indicate that Amber Jaden filed two restraining orders against her husband back in 2015. She described her husband as becoming mentally unstable while displaying bizarre behavior. Amber reportedly added that she thought her husband was using drugs. The documents also stated that Amber accused Matthew Jaden, her husband, of ranting and raving, punching walls, breaking photo frames, and threatening to kill her and her father. Amber stated in further filings regarding the protection order that she sought in 2015 that she was in a constant state of fear for the safety of not only herself, but her children. The protective order was granted against Matthew Jaden, but both were later dismissed. Very classic cycle of violence in a domestic violence type of situation. Authorities tried to make contact with Amber's husband, Matthew, last week to question him about his wife's disappearance. Apparently, a child at Jaden's home told deputies that Matthew wasn't home, but provided the phone number to the sheriff. When the police called the number, Matthew Jaden allegedly said that he was out looking for his wife and would not come back to speak with investigators. He explained to the police that his wife left home after an argument they had and he hadn't heard or seen from her since. Matthew Jaden, however, never reported his wife missing. And when deputies questioned him, he said, "Well, I thought you had to wait 48 hours to file a report." When Jaden did in fact arrive home and found police on his property, he told the police to get the F off of his property. And then ultimately, he apparently got into an altercation with the police deputies for failure to cooperate. Apparently, a taser was involved and Mr. Jaden had to be tased before he was arrested. And he apparently tried to flee to avoid arrest and also child neglect charges. The couple's youngest children are now in the state's care. Now, to date, no one has been arrested. We will give Mr. Jaden the presumption of innocence as we do with everyone. Well, because that's what everyone's entitled to under the United States Constitution. He has not been charged with anything, nor has he been convicted of anything. But you certainly have to wonder, particularly when you hear this next story, makes you got to think. That's right. A Minnesota husband reports his wife missing. And that's right, he's arrested almost immediately. Jonathan Grayblood, 30, was arrested Sunday afternoon about 1 p.m. That's just about 24 hours after he reported his wife missing. authorities discovered the body of 37-year-old Janine Grayblood. The arrest of Jonathan Grayblood came less than 20 minutes after Janine's Grayblood's remains were found in an unspecified area. According to the police investigators, Mr. Grayblood allegedly told officers that he last saw his wife hours earlier about 1:30 a.m. as she was leaving their home on foot. Detectives have yet to disclose where, specifically, Janine's body was found and what led them to the body. Statements made by the police thus far state that she was found deceased under suspicious circumstances. The autopsy is planned to determine the cause and manner of death. Mr. Grayblood is being held on suspicion of second-degree murder, but it's unclear exactly what evidence the police are relying upon for that, as to whether there was a statement of some type, an admission, or something left at the scene. We'll wait and see. Formal charges are expected this week. Let's do a bonus story here. This is kind of a feel-good one. A Louisiana sanitation worker helped save a young girl who was allegedly abducted Sunday night. The sanitation worker, a gentleman by the name of Dion Merrick, we should just call him Hero, called police after he noticed a car matching the description and license plate that was listed on an Amber Alert that he received. When the police arrived to the vehicle, guess what they found? That's right, the missing child inside, with a 33-year-old sex offender identified as Michael Surreal of New Iberia, Louisiana. That's a little bit of a bonus today. Now let's talk about the Georgia substitute teacher who is in a lot of hot water. A Georgia substitute teacher was arrested last Friday and charged with 19 counts of child molestation. What, pray tell, did Amelia Ressler do to get herself arrested? It appears as though she may have been pleasuring herself while in the classroom. It appears as though Miss Ressler was allegedly pleasuring herself while in the classroom, which was full of kids. The 19 counts represents one of each of the children in her second grade classroom at Mount Zion Elementary School. Investigators found evidence of the indecent act when someone in the community saw a video and alerted the school. The police obtained the video evidence because she videoed it herself and disseminated it, and people were able to get a hold of the evidence. Needless to say, the police were trying to conduct the investigation as gently as possible so as not to traumatize the second graders anymore. Miss Ressler is being held at the Carroll County Jail without bond as of the time we are reporting this. Obviously, we'll give her the presumption of innocence, but when it's on video, it makes you gotta wonder. Not to be outdone, a former Texas teacher was sentenced Friday to more than 10 years in prison for stalking a 16-year-old student and possessing child pornography. Ricky Lynn Bradley, 45, began sending the teen girl text messages in 2019, referring to her as his little girl and his new favorite. He reportedly admitted sending anonymous letters to the girl, her parents, and her classmates, which detailed fabricated sexual encounters between the teen and her boyfriend. The girl's mother reported seeing him drive by their home later in January, and the girl saw him parked at her private athletic practices in June. Court documents also revealed that during the investigation, that's right, they found images of child pornography on Bradley's electronic devices and graphic pictures, which included toddlers. Needless to say, the judge that Mr. Bradley went in front of was not impressed with his conduct, and he received a 5-year sentence to prison for the stalking charges and another 71 months on the child pornography charges. Those are to be served consecutively, not concurrent, which means together, consecutively, which means one after another. Lots of judges do consecutive because they don't believe that you should get a volume discount on crime. If that doesn't make you question humanity, I'm not exactly sure what would. The only way that you know who you are actually dealing with in life is if you truly get to know them. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about, what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, when you're going to do a prank, sometimes you may want to let others in on it as well. A man was shot and killed in Tennessee over the weekend after he and a friend attempted a robbery prank to put on a YouTube channel. The police say that they're looking into the claim that this killing was in self-defense. It is alleged Timothy Wilkes, 20, and a friend went up to a group of people, and one included a guy by the name of David Starnes Jr. He's 23. This was in the parking lot of the Urban Air Trampoline and Adventure Park. The would-be pranksters had butcher knives, according to officers. And then Starnes apparently wasn't in on the so-called joke, was in fear for his life, and shot Mr. Wilkes. Officers say that Starnes didn't know that it was a prank and that he opened fire to protect himself and others. No charges are being filed as of yet, but the investigation is ongoing. The things people will do for a few YouTube views. Next on the docket, take a look at this video. This video shows somebody walking up to a 91-year-old man in the Chinatown district in Oakland, California. It took place last month. It was on the corner of 8th and Harrison outside of an Asian resource center on January 31st when an unidentified person shoved him to the ground. The suspect also attacked a 60-year-old man and a 55-year-old woman on the same day. I mean, this is just pathetic, let alone to do it to an at-risk adult. So, Daniel Dae Kim and Daniel Wu, actors, put on social media that they would be offering a $25,000 reward, leading to information that would result in the arrest and conviction of this individual and any of their accomplices. The only thing that will break the bonds of loyalty faster than somebody going to jail themselves is money. So hopefully this type of money will lead to information and the arrest and prosecution of this individual. People don't need to go around pushing 91-year-old men, 60-year-old men, and 55-year-old women. There is a special place in hell for those type of individuals that do that. And finally, I know we had a busy docket, but our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But before we do that, let's get to our winner. Our winner last week, Stephen Copeland. That's right. That's not heroin. That's my laxative. Mr. Copeland, you are Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week. That's right. You will receive a Crime Talk mug. We will find you. If we can't find you that easily, we will go to crimetalksearch.com and find you. We'll mail you the mug. Maybe you can send us a mugshot that we can put up. Maybe a thumbs up, right? Maybe a picture of you and your laxative, not heroin, and let us know you received it. Now, our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day. Police have identified the man that was seen running half-naked at the Super Bowl last night. His name is Yuri Andrade. That's right, Mr. Andrade hauled butt across the field in the fourth quarter wearing black shorts and some sort of leotard. Anyone who saw the video is actually a victim, seeing him run across the field in his leotard. Well, he celebrated a little too early, should have kept his eye on the prize, making it to the end zone and running away. But no, he was tackled at the 1 yard line. Apparently, the announcer in the stadium said, pull up your pants, take off the bra, and be a man. Now, Mr. Andrade still got closer to the end zone last night than the Kansas City Chiefs ever did. And it turns out that Mr. Andrade did this for a YouTube prank for a porn site. Yep, their little publicity stunt. Well, what did Mr. Andrade get? I hope he got enough to cover his bond, which was posted at $500 cash, as well as a misdemeanor charge of trespassing on property. Well, Mr. Andrade, you are Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day, because if you want to go streaking, or at least in this case you didn't actually go streaking, at least you did it close, which was smart, but guess what? Nobody that runs on the field ever gets away. So Mr. Andrade, you are Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day starting this week. Congratulations. We'll try to bring you some tough competition to make it difficult for everyone to conclude who was the Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Week. That's all we have for you today. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk. And don't forget, tomorrow night we go live 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Please join us.